I am Roberta Schultz. My first car was a 1962, 1964, 1966 composite Volkswagen Beetle, pieced together in some would-be mechanic's garage and purchased for me for $200 by my daddy, who wanted me to have a little independence in my senior year of college. Yes, I said college. Car ownership was not yet a rite of passage for high school students back then. The easy gear shift and the forgiving clutch of the VW got me home for the holidays and allowed me to live off campus during graduate school. And if I didn't like the timing of my engine, I could simply pop that back end hood and turn the set screw for a little extra vroom. Sue Macy, author of Motor Girls, How Women Took the Wheel and Drove Boldly into the 20th Century, begins the story of how women entered the driving world with a little vignette about her own 1964 Ford Falcon, also purchased by her father, to get her to her first job as a newspaper reporter in 1972. Her book, published by National Geographic early this year, contains a foreword by none other than champion race driver Danica Patrick. Motor Girls chronicles the beginnings of the automobile and its role in advancing women as empowered citizens in charge of their own routes down the bumpy road of the 20th century. The first chapter describes one of the first races put together to introduce motor cars into American consciousness. When the publisher of the Chicago Times-Herald, Herman H. Kohlsatt, announced on July 9, 1895, that there would be a race for inventors to test their prototypes with a $500 prize attached, he figured that November 2nd would give the inventors plenty of time to get their entrants assembled. Although 83 vehicles had entered the race, only two were actually ready by the deadline. So an exhibition race took place between Oscar Mueller's gasoline-powered vehicle, imported from Carl Benz of Germany, and the latest powered vehicle built in the U.S. by brothers Charles and J. Frank Duryea. Mueller won, taking the $500 prize. When the actual race took place on November 28th, Chicago's unforgiving winter set the scene with 12 inches of wet, heavy snow. All the drivers were men, including the Duryeas, Mueller, and four other entrants sponsored by companies like R.H. Macy's and De La Verne Refrigerator Machine Company. The Duryeas took the first prize of $2,000, ushering in a time of intense competition to create durable motor cars. Sue Macy's book inserts interesting factoids between the chapters, like a list of motoring laws from the early 1900s. One law that caught my eye from New York City in 1901 stated that passengers in a car that broke the speed limit should be assessed the same fine and punishment as the driver. In Illinois around 1902, police officers could tighten a rope across the road to stop speeders or even roll a log in front of the offenders. In 1905, nighttime driving was forbidden in Marin County, California. In Chapter 2, Macy introduces the reader to prominent attitudes about women drivers in the early 1900s. One common assumption was that since women did not play baseball and were therefore unused to watching runners on both first and third who might steal bases, they did not possess the kind of awareness needed to drive cars. That would be the ability to do two things at once. I hear all you mothers out there laughing as I read this. And you women teachers with eyes in the back of your heads, two things at once? Try three. Most of Chapter 2 explains social attitudes that might deter women from driving and therefore gaining more autonomy in their everyday lives, while presenting women who largely ignored those attitudes, like Mary Anderson, who presented the first idea for windshield wipers in 1903, and competitive driver Joan Newton Cuneo, who could change her tires with ease, and Teddy Roosevelt's daughter, Alice, who purchased her own long-distance touring car and proved her driving prowess by successfully navigating a traffic jam of emergency vehicles on Pennsylvania Avenue. Chapter 3 focuses on the success of women in driving coast to coast, driving taxis, solo drives, and in staging suffrage demonstrations via vehicles. This chapter is followed by another interesting list of protective garb drivers needed to wear while motoring in open cars. There are descriptions and illustrations of the many goggles, hats, hoods, veils, coats, dusters, gloves, and even leggings drivers might have to don just to take a cruise down the dusty, rainy, or muddy roads. Chapter 4 features competitive driving as an emerging sport for women, discussing such women speedsters as the United States' own Joan Newton Cuneo, Camille Dugast of France, and Dorothy Levitt of Great Britain. Eventually, the American Automobile Association became involved in overseeing races in the United States, moving to ban women from their membership and thus from racing in general. Dorothy Levitt went on to write a book about driving called The Woman and the Car, a chatty little handbook for women who want to motor, which was again reprinted in 2014. Chapter 5 heralds the return of women to the steering wheel out of the necessity of World War I. Driving for Liberty discusses the many opportunities for women to operate cars and trucks in order to serve the overall war effort. The National League for Women's Service, the Women's Motor Corps, and volunteers for the American Red Cross are regaled for their brave driving exploits. The epilogue entitled Bumpy Roads discusses Madison Avenue's somewhat sexist approach to selling cars to over half of the population. There is also a detailed appendix crammed with facts and figures about women drivers and automobile production through 1920. Sue Macy's book offers an interesting glimpse into one important aspect of the struggle for women's autonomy and equality in the world. You can find a link to Motor Girls, How Women Took the Wheel and Drove Boldly into the 20th Century at wvxu.org/aroundcincinnati. I'm Roberta Schultz, taking it to the streets and the open road.